It's time for the Phenology Show. Phenology is the rhythmic biological nature of events as they relate to climate. And before I really get into it and start talking about some of my observations, I want to cover a couple of things. One, I got a nice letter from a name that is familiar to a lot of you, Augie Jensen. Augie and I have been writing letters back and forth for a couple of months now. Well, actually, a few more than a few months. Since probably last March, and his most recent letter I thought was very good because he mentioned at the bottom of his letter that he was required to do a report for science class, and it was so easy because he had done so many of these phenology reports that it was just a snap for him. He'd already been through all of that stuff, and he knew exactly what to do to get his science report done. So congratulations, Augie. I look forward to the day when you're able to send in more phenology reports. I had a really interesting conversation with Sean Conrad last night. Sean is a local birder, and he and I talked at length about a couple of things. One, the eruption of finches in northern Minnesota. And I have seen a number of notes coming in from people all around the area talking about evening grosbeaks, which we have not had here in significant numbers since the early 80s. Back in the early 80s, from about 1979 through about 1985, 86, I would have a flock of evening grosbeaks that would appear in the fall about this time. And they would stay all winter. And there might be 30 or 40 of them. And in those days, they would eat a 50-pound bag of sunflower seeds in just over a week. So I was buying 50 pounds of sunflower seeds every week. However, sunflowers in those days sold for about $6 a bag for 50 pounds. So it was a small investment. But they would come in and just cover the feeder, and there wouldn't be a room for a chickadee or a nuthatch or anything. And these birds would just sit there all day and eat and eat and eat and eat. And it was wonderful because they were lovely birds and gregarious, and they shouted at one another, and they were just, they added a cacophony to winter that you don't otherwise have. Now they are back. This year especially, they're coming back. And Sean and I talked about these eruptions of finches. And the evening grosbeak is one of them. There was apparently a very good crop of spruce budworms this summer. And that is the primary food source for juvenile or young nestling evening grosbeaks. And so the population got a good kickstart this year. And a lot of those birds are moving into northern Minnesota, which is an unusual occurrence because it has been 20 or 25 years. Well, no, it's probably been like 35 years since we had huge numbers of evening grosbeaks here in northern Minnesota. So watch for them. The males are bright yellow, black, and white. And the females are a little bit less colorful, but nonetheless just as beautiful as the males. Also, their close cousin, the pine grosbeaks, are coming into the area. I was out at the bog this week and came out of one of the chambers, and I heard this sweet, clear, whistled note. And I thought to myself, that can only be a pine grosbeak. And I've seen a number of pictures, and my friends Bob and Cheryl Tokarczuk and Cherry, they have pine grosbeaks at their feeder along with their usual flock of evening grosbeaks. They've had a flock of evening grosbeaks for several years, and I've been envious of them. I hope that this year a few of them find their way to my feeder, so I'll get a chance to look at them close up. So besides those, red poles, pine siskins, goldfinches, just a wonderful variety of finches that are in the area, and they're going to be here throughout the winter, we hope. Enough about finches. Another story that Sean told me last night was about a very unusual sighting in this area. In the Coleraine area, a Bullock's Oriole has been seen. And this is only, according to the Minnesota Ornithological Union's webpage, this is only the seventh time that a Bullock's Oriole has been found in Minnesota. This is only the second time that a Bullock's Oriole has been seen in the fall in Minnesota. The other five sightings that were spring sightings, all of them in May, and all of them in southern Minnesota. And Sean said that this may be the most eastern and northern sighting of a Bullock's Oriole in the state of Minnesota. And so quite a interesting thing. These, look up in your bird book about the Bullock's Oriole, and you'll see this unusual looking oriole. It's a western bird. And Sean had some communication with some friends, and one of them suggested that it might have been the fires in the west that drove this bird off of its home range and into northern Minnesota. But however it happened to find its way here, it is quite a sighting for this area. So Bullock's Oriole, kind of an interesting bird. Besides the Bullock's Oriole, oh boy, at my house, it's the red-bellied woodpecker and the downy and the hairy and the pileated all are hanging out there. I also have nuthatches, red-breasted and white-breasted. And I had a conversation with Dave Lick here this last week, and Dave was on his deer stand, and he noticed that every morning, just after sunrise, just about now, pardon me, a little brown bird would fly to a pine tree near his stand. Starting at the bottom, it would work its way up the trunk, looking and peeking here and there as it went up the trunk. And as soon as he described this behavior, I looked at him and I smiled and I said, "We're talking about a brown creeper." And he goes, "I thought so." And so it's not a common bird, but they are here and they are remarkably well adapted. It's an interesting evolutionary tale, because if you look at the brown creeper, as Dave described, the bird flies to the base of the tree and then proceeds to work up, looking at all the little crevices from below and probing in there. It's got a long, slightly decurved beak, and it probes in those little crevices, and it finds little worms, little maggots, little leftover caterpillars that are hoping to make it through the winter, and eats them. Now, if you think about a nuthatch, it is just the opposite. So the nuthatch is coming from the top, working down the tree, and the creeper is coming from the bottom, working up the tree. And though they're pursuing the same food, they have a different perspective on it. And so they arrive at their meal from a different angle. And that allows both of them to coexist in an area where one might otherwise dominate the other. I noticed last week we had some pretty strong winds and some pretty warm weather. It was quite nice last week, as you may recall, once we got that snow out of the way. Oh, man, I don't know. It was pretty surprising. I had 8 inches of snow at my house. I talked to Joel Rosen down in Mattawa, and Joel said that they got about 7 inches down there. I talked to a friend of mine. I don't think we got 4 inches here at the studio, and up at the bog, which is another 25 miles north of Grand Rapids, there was no snow at all. So it was a real narrow band of snow that came through in that. But that strong wind that associated with that warm weather that we got, I was sitting in my easy chair looking out the window, and I noticed all these little fluffs going by, and I thought, what the heck could this be? And so I went out and kind of did a little investigating, and it turns out that strong south wind was pulling the seeds off of the cattails and sending them flying. So the cattail seeds were flying in the wind this past week, in case you noticed a lot of fluff by your house. And let's see, what else did I have? I had, a red fox, a beautiful red fox. I've been seeing it quite often on my trips up to the bog. And this was no exception, just a lovely animal, tail fully furred and probably 4 inches thick, a great nose warmer for the wintertime, and dark. And this fox was bright red, but the tail was nearly black, tipped in black, actually tinged in black, tipped in white. It has that white ball or white knob at the end of its tail. I guess knob doesn't really describe it. It's just the hair at the very end of the tail is pure white. And this fox was just absolutely gorgeous. The ruffed grouse have been coming to the trees by my house to eat the apples, and there are still a few robins hanging around eating apples in that same tree, in that little cluster of trees that I have planted there, and they're doing pretty well. I had a note of a great gray owl from Krista, who lives in rural Bovee. And she had a couple of nice pictures of this great gray owl that had come down from up north, I suppose, and is in that area around Bovee right now, working to get food in that part of the state. And this may be a year when they begin to really come out, and we'll get a chance to see quite a few of them. Couple of other notes, the red oak in my front yard and the ironwoods up in the forest around the bog are both exhibiting signs of marquescence. And as I look out the window here at the river birch, it is marquescent as well. And you may recall from previous programs where I talked about marquescence or marcescence, I guess it can be pronounced either way. It is defined as withered but persisting, and it describes the leaves of the trees that wither in the fall, like the red oak and like the ironwood, and don't fall off. Now, in the case of the red oak, my red oak is probably down to about 5% of the leaves that it had in the middle of the summer. But these 5% will hang on until late winter, probably February, before they begin to let go. The ironwood, And the difference, if you're driving along, the difference is the ironwoods are going to be small. A large ironwood would be, you might find one 8 or 10 inches in diameter, seldom that large. The biggest ones, those bigger ones, are less likely to hold on to their leaves than the smaller ones. And the smaller ones that are growing in the understory, those that look like they'd make good tool handles for shovels and the like, and they do. Those are the ones that typically hold the leaves throughout the winter. And those leaves will remain on the ironwoods until probably April, when the new leaves coming out will force them off. So check out those. And finally today, and very quickly, I want to conclude by mentioning that Crooked Lake, where I live, a small 70-acre lake, shallow, about 25 feet, was frozen over yesterday, and I ventured out on the ice. I took my dog, and I took my little, I use a picaroon because it's got a nice sharp point on it, and I can slam it down into the ice. And if it goes through and brings up water, I know that I got to turn around and go back to shore. But yesterday, that was not the case, and we kind of explored the ice there a little bit. You need 2 inches of ice to be safe. You need to have a friend that goes with you. You need to have picks or a picaroon or ski poles or something that can extricate you from going through the ice. And this time of year, I try to stay where the water is shallow. I try to stay in 3 feet or less so that if I get wet, I'm only wet to the waist and I can walk home and put on dry clothes. So be careful. Lakes are starting to form ice. According to the weather report for the next few days, it's going to warm up again. And my lake, Crooked Lake, has had ice covered. This is the third time that the lake has been ice covered. So it froze back in October and then melted and opened up, and then it froze again briefly in early November and then opened up again in that warm weather. And now it is frozen again, but with the weather that's coming, I expect it'll probably open up again, and it'll be maybe the fourth time will be the charm this year. But at any rate, if you have a lake near you and it has ice on it, I advise caution. Know what you're doing, go prepared, and be safe. That's the Phenology Show for this week. As always, we encourage you to share your observations with us. But this morning, we're especially anxious for you to give us a call and pledge your support. You know, we love bringing you this, but it's not free. And we need you to help carry some of that cost. So call us with your support for KAXE this morning. We'll be glad to take your pledge.
The number is 800-662-5799.